If you love America, you're among friends here. Conservative Nation.
America, welcome to the program. This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Ethel Lopez, Cliff Stewart, I'm Sam Thurman. How you guys doing?
Real good. Thank you.
Awesome. Hey, Cliff, Ethel, and I are not attorneys, and the Just Cause Coast to Coast does not provide legal advice. Please contact your personal legal advisor for your personal legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by the callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of a Just Cause or a Just Cause Coast to Coast. But as always, we want to say thank you for tuning in and spending a little bit of time with us as we talk about, you know, judicial injustice. And we got a lot of it to talk about, man. This evening, we have a very full show. We're going to talk a little bit about the IRP6, and folks can follow us and go out to FreeTheIRP6.org. Again, FreeTheIRP6.org, and get information about that. We're going to talk about wrongful convictions. And then also on the program, associated with that discussion, we're going to have Nancy and Jim Petro. They're the authors of False Justice, and that's eight myths that convict the innocent. Kind of got my tongue tied just a little bit. So, Ethel, as far as the IRP6 goes, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, and you know, we're going to start giving out the entire story. Mm-hmm. We're going to give an overview. We're going to talk about the wrongful conviction of our brothers, the IRP6, Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Kendrick Barnes. But in the meantime, what's going on? We got 200 pages of transcript that's missing. What can people do to help in that regard?
Over 200 pages, that's a lot of transcript, you know. So we're asking the people out there to contact Attorney General Eric Holder's office at 202-514-2003 and 2005, and ask him to investigate this over 200 pages of missing transcript. You know, these guys can't get a fair appeals hearing, you know, a decision without having that transcript available. And we also want you to reach out to your local radio and television stations and ask them, why are they not covering this case? You know, this is all over social media. Everybody is hearing and reading about this. Why are they not covering it?
And Cliff, you know, right now the case is under appeal.
Yes.
And some of the points that are under appeal include what?
We've got a Fifth Amendment violation where one of the defendants was forced to take the stand by this Christine Arguello, the judge up in Denver. We also have the denial of an expert witness. That was Andrew Alborelli, who was on our show last week and the week before, pretty much giving his story. You know, we called it basically the missing testimony of Andrew Alborelli. Told everybody about what it was he was going to deal with had he got a chance to testify, but Judge Arguello did not allow him. And we also have the Speedy Trial Act that was violated. I mean, it's so many things, you know, exculpatory evidence that wasn't allowed to come in, basically showing that the software was valid. All these things that are on appeal that this judge, you know, there's one thing to say, oh, these are just errors that, you know, it was an accident or something that was inadvertent. These are, you know, I don't call them errors. I don't call them, egregious errors. I call them crimes. You committed a crime in the courtroom as a judge. You need to be held accountable for it.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've been able to get the IRP6 story out all over the nation. Obviously, you know, we have a Just Cause Coast to Coast right here on the AJC Radio Network. And our AJC radio network is growing, growing, growing. We have the Conservative Nation Media, Contending for Truth. AJCRadio.com is where you can find all of the programming information. We have recently launched on ArtistFirst.com as well. And we are on Artist First 7 days a week. And I believe that's actually going to launch on February 1st. But this week you can actually start listening. And that's going to be at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Also, we have on live365.com, AJC Radio Network, and that's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. You can go out there and listen to, you can get your fill of the IRP6 story, and there is a schedule that's posted there. And so you can actually, you know, mark your calendar and say, hey, I want to hear more from Andrew Alvarelli, and I want to hear more about that situation with the expert witness. So we have a lot of places where folks can stay tuned in and stay on top of the IRP6 story. Now, as I stated, you can go out to ajcradio.com. Again, ajcradio.com for all of your scheduling activities and or scheduled times. And then you can also listen to archives of the program as well. We'd like you to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. And as Ethel was talking about the 200 pages of transcript, we have a petition out on change.org where you can go out there and sign that. Go to change.org, put in a search on IRP6, sign that petition. Do it tonight while you're listening. You know, we want you to go out there, sign it, put in a comment as to why you're signing it. We need to draw attention, and we are drawing attention to this situation with the 200 pages of transcript. So, guys, we have been AJC and IRP6 story is, you know, like I said, we've been getting it out there. This has been a busy weekend.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on Saturday, the Just Cause group was on Janice Graham, along with Pastor Rose Banks of the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. Janice Graham is the host of Our Common Ground. That was an excellent program.
Absolutely.
Man, Janice pulled that together.
Yes,
and
yes.
And that, if you haven't heard that one, go out to Our Common Ground. I believe that's on Blog Talk Radio. And check out the archives of that. On Sunday, we were on Don and Donna, the Cowboy Logic. And on Cowboy Logic, man, you know, that was another one.
Yeah.
And Donna, she was formerly of Fox Television.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was another excellent program excellent. That you can check that one out. Last night.
Yes. Last night.
There was a program, Carl Nelson, WOL 1450 in Washington, D.C. Now, that program, we're going to talk about that in our second hour.
Yes, we
because
are.
Because Mr. Nelson... And I use that term very loosely. He was he kind of went over the edge there. He was rude, and he just, you know, things got derailed there. I'm not going to give it away right now because we're going to talk extensively about Mr. Nelson's attitude on that program. So anyway, you want to be sure to stay tuned in for that second hour because we're going to talk about how on the Carl Nelson show, it was not a pleasant situation in the way that he treated the IRP6, the way he treated Pastor Rose Banks, and you, Ethel, as
oh,
well.
Yes, absolutely.
So we'll talk more about that. I'm trying to hold back from getting into that conversation right now. It's very difficult because it was a very bad situation that Mr. Nelson created there.
Yes.
So let's jump to the news. Ethel, you have a story that you pulled. Go for it.
Absolutely. And this is a story that came out of the Beatrice Daily Sun in Beatrice, Nebraska. Wrongful conviction case go to the jury. And this is about the Beatrice Six. This were six people who were wrongly convicted of murdering an elderly woman back in 1985 in her home. And it came to find out, you know, through DNA testing that these people were innocent. You know, DNA proved that they were innocent. One of the gentlemen who was of the six has passed away since. But the three people, the county sheriff has died since then. The deputy, Searcy, he led the investigation, and with a part-time deputy named Price. And all of these people, they are saying, the lawyers for these six people are saying that these guys work together to convict these guys. And so right now, trial is going on, and these three people are the ones who are on trial, and they're going up before a jury so the jury can say whether or not they actually did set these six people up. They served a total of over 77 years in prison before they were exonerated.
Wow.
And, you know, looking at this story, they, you know, the what do you call it? The attorney for, you know, these three idiots
yeah.
that are now up on trial for convicting these people. His story does not even hold water.
At
I
all.
Mean, he's saying, well, they didn't, you know, they didn't create any evidence. The three followed the investigation where the evidence led them. They didn't make up anything. And then they try to use this. Three of the six confessed and implicated others. After all, that means absolutely nothing. That's like you say somebody on the street confess, oh, so-and-so did this murder, so that gives you evidence to say you're going to be convicted just because somebody said so. So this, I mean, it's great to see that they're finally going after these people. And
but you know what? One of the things to this, Cliff,
mm-hmm.
the man who actually his DNA was at the scene.
Right.
This stupid people come back and say he just went there after the murders that had been committed.
Right. Yeah.
But his DNA was the only DNA found at the scene.
Yeah. He just knew they were like, I know they're going to commit this crime. I'm going back. And I love what the. What the Beatrice Six attorney Jeffrey Patterson said. He said it's just incredible to think that this is not reckless conduct by by the people who tried the Beatrice Six in the first place.
And another thing he said also, and it was Beatrice Six is a nice label, he said, but it's six individual lives and families and mm-hmm. hopes and dreams that were taken by this reckless investigation and put in jail for over 77 years. And that's the part that reminds me of the IRP 6.
Absolutely.
You know, with these guys being put in prison as well as their families, their hopes and their dreams being taken away. And that's the kind of crap that takes place when they do stuff like that.
Absolutely. And like you've talked on several occasions, Ethel, is that folks – don't realize that when someone is wrongfully convicted, or even if a person is convicted on under legitimate situations, more than that person who is in prison is affected.
Yeah.
You have children that are affected. You have spouses that are affected. You have parents that are affected. It affects an entire community when it really boils down to.
Yes,
absolutely. America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalisky, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalisky, Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Where America always wins.
And while we're talking about ConservativeNationMedia.com, Cliff, let's do a couple of shout-outs.
That's right. We want to give a shout-out to Duke Brooks. You know, Duke Brooks, if it wasn't for you, Duke, you know, we wouldn't be heard right now. Duke is the one that makes it possible for us to be on this Tuesday night spot. We want to make sure that you understand we appreciate it, you and everybody who makes it possible for us. If it wasn't for you, A Just Cause Radio wouldn't be here on Tuesday and not being able to allow people to hear about the IRP 6 on this station. We appreciate it, Duke. And also, Scott Osborne, Underground Hard Drive, that's our Thursday night spot. We appreciate you, Scott, our brother from another mother.
Oh, yes.
Without him, you wouldn't be listening to us on Thursday. So we want to let you guys know that we're here. We still appreciate it. We want to let the world know that you guys are the ones that made it possible.
Absolutely. Hey, this other article clip that we were talking about before the program, it comes from the Crime Report. crimereport.org, an article by Jordan Smith. Now, this one is very interesting also in the sense the title is Stopping the Public Defender Wheel. Mm-hmm. Now, this one is talking about how judges, when it comes to public defenders, judges typically in many jurisdictions have they do the appointing of the counsel for indigent clients. That same judge will also rule in the client's cases. The judge also approves requests for case investigators, case experts, and then they ultimately sign off on the payment for the defense attorney. Now, you know, we know there are some good public defenders out there, so mm-hmm. this is not about bashing public defenders.
Right.
But this is about bringing awareness on a particular subject and with regard to reform that is sorely needed.
Yeah.
So in Texas, they got this. They're going to undertake this change in the system whereby the defendant will actually have an option to choose from a list of attorneys to represent them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hoping that this change will bring about overall effectiveness and bring about, a change in the confidence
right.
in the criminal justice system. Now, this thing is based on a 2010 Cato Institute report, which basically talks about, you know, in some other countries, it hasn't been done in the United States.
Right, right, right.
But in other countries, you know, they actually have this. Now, you know, it's one of those things where, like we say in the IRP 6 case, and people ask, and we're going to talk about this a little bit too when we talk about what happened last night. Well, why did they go pro se? because of fact, because of this right here. When you have an attorney who's getting paid by the same people who is paying the prosecutor,
that's right.
You know, that is
that's
a setup, man.
That's a problem. And under the on this article, it says that the fundamental rights and the fact that, that the judge is the one, like you said, Sam, that, that pays, approves, and makes sure that the court-appointed attorney gets everything they need. He says such stories, according to Levin, demonstrate how the system is failing to measure up to what is the bottom line, such a fundamental constitutional right to counsel. So it shows that the way America is doing it is basically taking away the constitutional rights of our citizens. So I applaud them for coming up with
that. Absolutely. That's the Crime Report, an article by Jordan Smith, and it's entitled Stopping the Public Defender Wheel. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Go, Caleb!
Come on, hit a homer, Jesse!
Let's go, guys!
Hey, did you guys know that kids who play sports earn more money when they grow up?
Of course. I knew that.
Hey, did you guys know that kids who read books have a bigger vocabulary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow, jinx. Did you guys know that friendly children have more friends?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true. I knew that. Did you guys know that winter babies are better at music?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, pretty obvious.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Obvious. Oh, hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
Huh, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure I knew that. I'm pretty sure you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Hi, this is Dave Vance inviting you to join me every Monday night for Inside Tennessee on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Even if you're not from the volunteer state, you'll want to know what's happening because one day it will affect you. Every week you'll hear interviews with experts, legislators, and citizens who are fed up and making a stand. So join us every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central Time for Inside Tennessee on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez on the AJC Radio Network. So, let's jump to talking about some wrongful conviction. And, you know, we're going to be bringing Jim and Nancy Petro into the conversation here in just a moment. But, you know, we pulled some stats earlier, Ethel. What do we find out here?
Well, this is wrongful conviction statistics from Occupy Theory, dated the 3rd of January this year. Talking about since 1989, more than 300 convictions have been overturned due to DNA evidence, and 17 people wrongly convicted and sent to death row, 17 out of that. Okay, and then it also talks about 60% of the people who have been wrongly convicted with through this DNA thing have been financially compensated. Well, that's a good thing. But in some cases, the average person who's been convicted with this method has already spent more than 13 years in prison before they've been released.
Wow. And, you know, it goes on to say here also that in the United States, 3,944 years have been served by innocent people in prison. I mean, that's
outrageous.
That's crazy. 72% of wrongful convictions involve eyewitnesses' false identification.
Mm.
I mean, it's just and it just persists. And then, how many times have we heard and had exonerees on the program who've talked about the coerced confession.
That's right.
And so, you know, it's just it's crazy with that many situations. And, you know, then it begs the question as to the DNA situation.
Exactly.
Why does it take so long to get DNA testing done? I mean, that's just crazy.
Oh, yeah. And why does it take so long after the DNA testing for them to, you know, once they get the answer, why does it take so long to get somebody out of prison? That's another piece of the system that needs to be worked on.
Yeah.
But looking at this article under the wrongful conviction section, it says false imprisonment, 52% of these cases involves false imprisonment or perjury, and 42% of these cases cited official misconduct as the reason, as the primary reason to falsehood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does 42% of them are from official misconduct, but it's still on the books that these officials have are granted immunity?
Exactly.
They nothing happens to them. They get a slap on the wrist. You can't go after them criminally. You can't really go after them civilly. And yet 42% of the false imprisonments are because of them.
That's
and that is totally ridiculous. This is why the whole country needs to stand up and say we need to do something about this.
And, you know, I think we got a couple of folks on the line who will help to, you know, shed a little bit of light on this. Joining us this evening, we have Jim and Nancy Pietro. They are the authors of False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent. Now, you know, Jim Pietro is a former Ohio Attorney General, and he crusades against wrongful convictions, informing citizens how they can help prevent this terrifying common miscarriage of justice. Now, both Jim and Nancy, they sit on the board of the advisory board of the National Registry of Exonerations. And, you know, Jim kind of got into this thing. It was a case that was there in his state, and the case exonerated Clarence Elkins, a family man with no prior criminal record who had been sentenced to life in prison for murder that he didn't even commit. Now, Clarence did end up serving 6.5 years in prison, but, you know, it just points to the fact that there are problems. And as we, you know, look at Jim and Nancy's profile and regarding their book, you know, it raises questions regarding the fairness of our justice system and identifies flaws in how police and prosecutors handle evidence, especially in capital cases. Jim and Nancy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's very good to be on with you. I'm glad to have this opportunity to talk about this. The one thing I'd like to point out right away is that you used a great number, 312 individuals have been exonerated for DNA. But the actual statistics since 1989 is more than 1,297 exonerated from all sources beyond DNA. So that becomes a much larger number. And you have to understand that once someone is convicted, to actually prove their innocence becomes an overwhelming obstacle. And so I've always been convinced there are thousands and thousands more individuals in prison as a result of wrongful conviction.
Wow.
And, you know, a lot of times it boils down to whether or not there's someone willing to champion the cause. And obviously, Jim and Nancy, that's something that both of you are doing. That's something a Just Cause is doing. Unfortunately, and as you are probably well aware, the system is designed to where when a person is convicted and the prison door or the prison bars, the gate, whatever it is, when it closes behind them, there is no one a lot of times to fight for a person, and it's not designed to allow the inmate to have a voice. And so, you know, we appreciate the fact that you guys are bringing this type of thing to the forefront. So tell us a little bit about False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent.
You know, the book really came about as a result of my wife being inspired by a circumstance where I, serving as Attorney General, had information brought to my attention by Mark Godsey, who was the head of the Ohio Innocence Project, which convinced me, and then we did our own investigation in the Attorney General's office, convinced me that a man in prison for murder was absolutely innocent of the crime. And so I guess it's fair to say I became probably the only Attorney General in the country to actually intervene in a case on the side of a convicted murderer sitting in prison, basically urging the prosecutors and the court in the county in which this conviction had occurred, urging that they reexamine this and ultimately release him. And eventually that's what happened. And so it was, you know, it was a great concern to me. I began to look into it more deeply. There's no doubt in my mind that wrongful conviction occurs too often. And the point of my advocacy now, and Nancy and I give a lot of presentations. Our book, of course, is False Justice. It's printed in the United States. There's a new revised edition coming out, published by Routledge Publishing, and that will be coming out in July. The book has also been published in Chinese, in China, by Peking University Press. And the issues that we try to advocate for most aggressively is the notion that the role of the prosecutor is not simply to win conviction. It is to be the minister of justice, a person whose sworn duty is to always seek the truth. And if prosecutors did that, if they looked carefully at the common contributors to wrongful conviction, if they determined the strength of their evidence not on what can convince the jury, but what is most likely truthful, we will have better outcomes. And so a lot of our work, and I'm not criticizing prosecutors. I was trained as a prosecutor myself 40 years ago. And in that training, I was basically encouraged to go out and win. But I did have mentors in the prosecutor's office who also really inspired me to look for the truth and understand that the bottom line is always to seek justice.
Mm-hmm. And Jim, I have a question for you. You know, you said that you basically started to look in this case about this wrongly convicted individual who was convicted of murder. And I wanted to ask you, during your fight and your stance, your advocacy for this person, did you get ostracized by the Ohio state, by the Ohio judicial system? How did they treat you when you started to fight for this man, for his freedom?
I think those people in law enforcement, and that includes police and prosecutors, wondered what I was up to, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they think, you know, so often when you do something that is a little bit controversial and you're in elective office, they say, well, it's just political. He's trying to get attention. And obviously that had absolutely nothing to do with it. Politically, I probably would be better off keeping my mouth shut.
Right.
But in reality, I saw a situation, a circumstance, where because of DNA, I became convinced that Clarence Elkins was an innocent man.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, when you're in a position where you can advocate, and I could do that,
mm-hmm.
then you're really, and you see facts presented to you that indicate that you need to advocate, then that's what you do. And I've always, you know, in my career, I'm retired now, but in my career, that's always what I sought to do.
And was that about the same way with your book, False Justice? Is that about the same kind of pushback?
Well, we wanted to get the message out. I mean, there is a very difficult case that we talk about in False Justice, and it's a remarkable story of a man named Dean Gillespie, who I believe is absolutely innocent. And I represented him along with Mark Godsey from the Ohio Innocence Project through a battle that took us 5 or 6 years, right after I left the Attorney General's office. And finally the battle was won in December of 2011, and he finally got released from prison for 20 years. And I'm totally convinced he's innocent, but I can assure you the prosecutor of that county still believes and still tells people broadly that this man's guilty of the crimes. Yet the contributors that we look at as the common flaws of prosecutor error, conviction error that occurs, you know, when a jury convicts an individual who ultimately turns out to be innocent, they're all present in this case. It's an eyewitness case. The eyewitness identified him more than 2 years after the crime was committed. There are experts across the board that would say after 9, 10, 11 months, any eyewitness identification is purely a matter of chance unless they happen to know the individual. So, so when you see that kind of mistake made that kept a person in prison for 20 years, your heart basically tells you, you've got to pursue this more fully. You've got to look for opportunity, determine that a change can be made, and we should work toward change. Mark Godsey and I did have an opportunity to go to the Ohio legislature and make some reforms. There's still more that needs to be done, but Ohio led the way. Some early reforms, the quality of those reforms are being improved upon in other jurisdictions. Ohio needs to even improve the reforms that we began in 2007, but all of those things need to be addressed, and that's the whole point of the advocacy that I've gotten involved in. And my wife and I really, I think, I can never tell for sure if it makes a difference, but certainly many people listen to us and begin looking to their local prosecutor, and that's what we're asking them to do. And tell their local prosecutor, we want you to be careful. We hold conviction error to be a serious mistake, something that you have to do all you can to avoid at all costs. And
absolutely,
we want that message to go to the prosecution.
Absolutely. Callers, you can call in at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. You can get in on this conversation with our special guest this evening, Jim and Nancy Petro. They're the authors of False Justice, Eight Myths That Convict the Innocent. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of those myths when we come back. Cliff.
One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance, techniques, and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did.
Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on the very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it. That's what Living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
One goat can make the difference between nourishment and hunger. One goat can make the difference between poverty and sustained income. In the war-torn areas of southern Sudan, one goat can make the difference between life and death. Find out how you can help. Visit goatsfortheoldgoat.org. That's goats, F-O-R, theoldgoat.org. Fighting hunger, one goat at a time.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Walk to work, walk the dog, have the dog walk you, take a hike, take a bike, skate, dance, hop, jump, do the Humpty Humps, skip seconds, skip dessert, skip to my loo, don't skip breakfast, drink H2O, lower your sodium, raise the roof, shake your booty, stock up on vegetables, and don't forget to eat them. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
I Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Sam Thurmond, Ethel Lopez, Cliff Stewart, being joined this evening by Jim Petro, Nancy Petro, authors of False Justice, Eight Myths That Convict the Innocent. Nancy, Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Once again, it's great to be with you. Thank you very much.
Now, in your book, False Justice, Eight Myths That Convict the Innocent, and as you know, tonight we're talking about wrongful convictions, and we took a look at those, and you can obviously go through all, you know, give us a little highlight on the eight, but we picked out three of them, and we said, hey, that will be interesting to talk about because it directly relates to one of the main cases that we're fighting for, being the IRP6. And so, you know, we looked at 2, 4, and 6, and it's our system almost never convicts an innocent person. That's number 2. Number 4 was wrongful convictions are caused by innocent human error. And then number 6 was conviction errors get corrected on appeal. Man, when we read those, it was like, boy, they must have been following the IRP6 story, man, because these are right down the alley of the things that we're dealing with this situation.
Well, and you have to understand, I'll begin with the number 6 first, because so often people feel, and in other venues around the world, the appeal process actually looks at factual determinations more fully than we do in America. The jury in a case, or the judge if there's no jury in a criminal case, is the finder of fact. And those factual findings are rarely overturned by an appellate court unless they're against, in Ohio, and not every state has this, in Ohio we have the standard of manifest weight of the evidence, and if they're contrary to the manifest weight of the evidence, then an appellate court can say, you know, those facts just aren't true. But that's not what happens 99.9% of the time. An appellate court accepts the facts as found by the trial court and then looks for issues of law. That's why a wrong conviction rarely involves issues of law as much as it's a wrong factual determination. They do not get corrected on appeal. We can tell you that the 1,297 exonerations that have occurred, the 312 exonerations as a result of DNA, all of that occurred after the appeals were all finished. You know, those exonerations occurred many, many years after appellate courts, sometimes the state Supreme Court, heard the case and refused to grant relief. You know, so cases don't get changed by an appeal very often, and that doesn't solve the problem with wrongful conviction. The other one that you brought up is that wrongful convictions are the result of innocence. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Jim, let me ask you a question about number 6. So sure. when you look at the appeal situation, and we've been told, you know, and the IRP6 case is actually a federal case, but we've been told by a couple of attorneys that, you know, it is very important, and I reflect back on the IRP6 case, but I guess it applies across the board, and wanted to get your views on this, that it is very important that if there is a question about any procedural type situation that's going on in that courtroom, it is important to object, because through that objection, you're making it a matter of record that there is something questionable here, and if you don't object, then absolutely, you know, the Court of Appeals is going to, they don't have anything to go on as far as saying that, well, there was a question here and the defendant objected to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I started working for the prosecutor's office in Franklin County, Columbus, Ohio, about 6 weeks before the state bar results came out. I had taken the bar exam that summer. I started after Labor Day. And so I really kind of watched the pros try cases because I knew that I was going to be getting into that mix. And sure enough, I prosecuted my first major felony crime the Monday after I was sworn into the bar. The point I would make is the most important thing you learn as you watch the pros is if you have a valid objection, make it, get it on the record, because if you don't get it on the record, it's likely waived.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that's what we find, and a lot of times, you know, not every time, and in the case with some court-appointed attorneys, defense attorneys, is that a lot of times they're just looking for their client to, you know, pretty much cop a plea, or they're going in saying, you know, if you do go in to, you know, and try to fight this, we have seen where these court-appointed attorneys will not make proper objections, things where, you know, people, just any layperson sitting out in the gallery says, why isn't he saying something like that? Why isn't he, you know, why is he allowing the prosecutor to lie about his client, to bring up things that are not true evidence and not making an objection? And, that, you know, we saw that lesson a very hard way, namely in the case with LaWanna Clark and her attorney, how there was no objections made to what the prosecutor did. And she ended up spending 6 months in federal prison because it was pretty much he handed her over to the prosecutor by not making an objection, by not really fighting her case. And so, yes, a great point that you have to fight, you have to make an objection, because the appellate court, even if you have evidence in your hand, may still say, well, you didn't make an objection to the fact that the prosecutor lied on you. There's nothing that we can do. And that is a travesty. That is, in my opinion, disgusting, but it is pretty much what the law is.
Joining us this evening are Jim and Nancy Petro, authors of False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent. Callers, you can call in at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Cliff.
Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman, Duke Brooks, calls himself a paleocon. And rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his blood, or his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hanger flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
So, Jim and Nancy, we just covered myth number 6. And, Jim, I think you were getting ready to move on to one of the other ones. What was next on the list?
You know, I would say that those who believe, and this truly is a myth, that wrongful convictions almost never occur, and if they do occur, they are the result of innocent human error. Not really. The human error that occurs is not necessarily innocent, because the prosecutor and the police have done things to kind of shave the rules a little bit, and they haven't really lived up to their responsibilities. It is more, it is a responsibility of a prosecutor and police to make sure that they do all in their power to get it right. If a prosecutor says, I don't make the decision about whether a person's guilty or innocent, that's up to the jury, I just give them the evidence, then they're missing the point of their responsibility. Their responsibility is to try to always assure that the truth has been found and that justice has been done. And when they fail to do that, that's not innocent. They're failing to meet their underlying responsibility.
You know, I just want to jump in with one point on this, and that
sure,
is
man.
That before DNA, I think, you know, we had a different philosophy. But since DNA, it's a new era, because DNA really proved that we are convicting innocent people much more frequently than most Americans imagined. And we had to look at these cases, and of course, we didn't do this. There were numerous academic and legal researchers who looked at these DNA cases in which DNA proved a wrongful conviction, and they studied them, and they were able to determine what the contributors recurring over and over again were in these cases that were just truly miscarried justice. Now that we've known these lessons, I think prosecutors need to step back and realize that they can't default to that old theory of, I just present the case, and the wisdom of the jury will prevail. Because what we've learned is that no jury can discern the truth if the evidence presented to them is unreliable. If
Absolutely.
A forensic scientist tells them that the odds are, you know, 1 in 2,000 that this person didn't do it, well, how can they evaluate that? And especially if that's a false statement that's not proven by any quantifiable science. And we can look at every form of evidence presented, and if it's just not true, that can easily fool a jury. A well-intentioned jury panel can make an error. And so, you know, with the great responsibility that comes with being a prosecutor comes now a recognition that they have to feel responsible for the outcome of a trial.
Absolutely. Jim and Nancy Petro are joining us this evening talking about false justice, 8 myths that convict the innocent. When we come back, we have a caller waiting in the queue. Want to jump in on this conversation. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Hello.
Hey, Billy.
Yeah?
Do you want to go to the state fair?
Yeah.
Do you want to ride the roller coaster?
Yeah.
The big one?
Yeah.
The one with the reverse flip?
Yeah!
Well, you can't.
What?
You see, Billy, when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have done with it, including going to the state fair.
Oh, man.
Cheer up. This year, your parents will make it right. They're going to visit EnergySavers.gov, where they'll get tips on how to save energy and money. Then they'll add extra insulation and get a few of those Energy Star appliances. They could save hundreds of dollars a year. And you know what, Billy?
What?
They'll take you to the state fair next year.
But I want to go this year.
I know you do, Billy. I know you do. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Meadows, your host on Grit and Grace. Please join us every Tuesday night from 10 to 12 Eastern for an honest look at the top political and cultural issues that are affecting Americans today. That's Grit and Grace for conservative analysis that is smart and entertaining. Tuesdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Central, 10 to 12 Eastern on conservativenationmedia.com.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez joining us on the program this evening. Jim and Nancy Petro, authors of False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent. Cliff, let's go to the phones.
Okay, we have Sherry from Pennsylvania. How are you tonight?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. You have a comment or a question?
Yes, I do. I actually have a comment regarding to number 6 in the aspect of being proactive rather than waiting for organizations such as the Innocence Project to help after somebody is convicted and spends years upon years in jail. I'm currently going through this right now with my fiancé. He's waiting extradition. But I still send out email after email every day and trying to get anybody to help because I don't want to see him spend years in jail before somebody will help, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think on the aspect of being proactive, I think that's not really touched based on very often. It's usually, like they said, in appeals and after the person has been convicted.
Right, okay.
You know,
yeah, and
Jim
and
Jesse,
you guys can answer.
Let me comment just that sentiment underscores the importance of a robust public defender system. Mm-hmm. We know that lawyers are expensive, and we know that in the justice system, the Supreme Court of the United States 50 years ago said, an individual who's at risk of their liberty has a right to counsel. And so in a lot of venues, we have a good, solid public defender system where the public defenders are trained like the prosecutors are trained. Now, they may not have the same level of resources, but at least they have the training and the experience to be sure that they correctly proceed with the case, that they give good legal advice, they object where warranted, they prepare the case for an appeal if an appeal is warranted. So often, I think it's fair to say that a wrongful conviction occurs where someone without requisite experience was the defense attorney involved. And that's a tragedy, because if we're going to have a system, if we're going to, and the system is not cheap. Having public defenders is not a cheap system, but, you know, it is cheaper to have a strong, effective network of trained public defenders than to have a circumstance where the judge simply appoints a local lawyer who doesn't have that kind of experience to represent the defendant in court. That's something that has failed, and for 20 years I've fought against that in favor of a uniform, effective public defender system. Part of my career, after I left my service as Attorney General, I was on the State Public Defender Commission. And I have confidence where the system trains lawyers to be public defenders. I do have confidence in their skill, and I have great respect for what they do.
You know, our callers brought up a very good point, because inadequate defense is one of the major recurring contributors to wrongful conviction. And it is important that people really understand. And again, if people believe it's going to get corrected on appeal, they are putting too much confidence in what happens post-conviction. It's very important that anyone try to get adequate defense and we all try to get it right the first time.
You know, I mentioned that because also I talked about Dean Gillespie. Dean Gillespie was convicted by a jury after the jury for the longest time was not able to reach a unanimous verdict. And frankly, the majority of them were in favor of acquittal, but they couldn't turn the others. The judge finally got mad at him and yelled at him and said, "You have a duty to get a verdict. You get back in that jury room and get a verdict." They came out and they said, "Okay, we think he's guilty." And after the words, they were interviewed, and several of them said, "Well, we weren't sure. I don't know if he's guilty or not. It didn't look like he was guilty. But we figure it'll be corrected on appeal." Dean spent 20 years in prison.
My goodness.
Wow. And it shows, too, that, you know, a judge in their position should not, you know, I often say that a judge should play referee. Say, you know, if the prosecutor and the defense, if one of them does something wrong, you know, the judge blows the whistle and say, "Hey, you're in foul territory. You need to get back in line." But to tell the jury, "You need to come to a decision. You need to reach a verdict," that may not necessarily be true, because if the jury is hung, then the jury is hung. If there's not evidence to convict, then it just doesn't exist. And without a reasonable doubt, this person, like you say, that this man was innocent in the first place. And if you don't have a conviction without a reasonable doubt, if you doubt at all that this person did it, then you should say that, and a judge should not force a juror to say, "You get in there and come back with me a verdict." The verdict should be, "I don't think this person is guilty, and I will stick with that." But it boils down to a juror understanding what their actual rights are. And
you are absolutely right. You raised that very effectively. It's totally true. Judges can't manipulate the jury. You have to leave it up to them and let them determine if there is truly proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And the jury really needs to be instructed clearly on what reasonable doubt really means.
Mm-hmm. And
so
we had
your caller. I think we all have to realize that it's very, very important to take this seriously. The Innocence Project, you know, people are concerned that they don't help enough people, and of course they're so limited by financial and human resources because each of these cases is so difficult to turn around. So you know, it's easier to get it right the first time.
Right, and you know, we have one of our guests was from the Fully Informed Jury Association, and that is one of their charters to ensure that jurors know that You know, it is not the law that a judge can push you around, force you to come up with a verdict. If it's not there, it's not there. And it should be at that point, hey, we cannot come to a conclusion. Some of us have, doubt that this person is guilty. And so we have to stick with our belief so that it is the not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law as well that says, you know, we need to quit convicting guilty people. And what I had another question for you guys, Jim and Nancy, is as far as the appeals process, you know, one of the things that you say is wrongful, one of the myths, wrongful convictions are conviction errors get corrected on appeal. So why does it take so long for the appellate process to finish out? You know, like in the case that A Just Cause is working on with IRP6, their case has been under appeal for over a year. They've been locked up for 18 months in federal prison. And one of the glaring issues on appeal is that 200 pages of their transcript is missing. And from your experience, Jim, as an attorney general, how does that – I mean, talk to us about that as far as you being an attorney general and now an advocate for the innocent. Talk to us about a missing transcript, that being on an appeal, and still, six men are locked up for 18 months. And where does that fall under?
If there was a legitimate argument that could be made by mm-hmm. the defense counsel on the appeal that the missing transcript becomes error that is no longer harmless, then I think the appellate court has a responsibility to act on that very quickly and basically say, you know, there's no record. There's not the full record of the trial is not before us. So we're not able to legitimately review this on an appeal basis, and therefore we're sending it back. It needs to be retried. I can't imagine that part of the record that might be significant and meaningful in terms of guilt or innocence, if it's missing, I think the appellate court has a duty to act with all deliberate speed.
Right, and in this situation, this piece of the transcript, these 200 pages.
It's over 200
right,
pages.
Right, over 200 pages, and encompassed in that is a Fifth Amendment violation. The defendants are saying the judge told us that she will close our case if one of us does not take the stand. The judge, of course, says she didn't say that. That is the sidebar conference is a part of this 200 pages of missing transcript. And so just like you say, the appellate court should speedily and judiciously act on this to say, hey, we don't even have the entire record. The defendants are saying one thing. The judge is saying another. The prosecutor, he hasn't said anything about it. You know, he's just saying, you know, like, I don't want to be a part of this. But they should have acted much swifter than they have. I mean, they haven't acted at all, but 18 months in federal prison, and you have over 200 pages of your transcript. And like you said, Jim, a part of that transcript is where there is a serious error that occurred. You know, and I hate using that word, an error, because, you know, I understand lawfully that's what it's called, but I call it a crime. If a judge says you will waive your Fifth Amendment right and take the stand or I'll close your case, that is beyond egregious, and it should be dealt with immediately.
Well, and again, I say if what is missing is meaningful, then you're right. I think you've got to really examine that and deal with it very quickly.
Okay, so Jim, we got to pay a few more bills, and so we ask that you and Nancy just kind of hang tight. We're going to come back after this next break, and we're going to ask you to go to that last myth that we were going to talk about and tackle that one and talk a little bit more about some of the things that impact how innocent people end up getting wrongfully convicted. This is A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We will be right back.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good evening. For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. Democrats are counting on President Obama's State of the Union address tonight to be a launching point for a year of sustained assault on Republicans over a populist economic agenda. It's part of an effort to focus more on bread-and-butter issues and less on income inequality, they say. White House officials say Obama's message will place any discussion of inequality in the broader context of shrinking economic opportunity. He'll seek to make his economic policy more relatable to ordinary Americans, focusing on college affordability, retirement security, and health care. That's a good strategy, according to Senator Chuck Schumer. Schumer said yesterday that the party that taps into the decline in middle-class incomes and the lack of good jobs and figures out a satisfying answer will dominate the 2014 elections. The minimum goal for Democrats this year is to preserve their control of the Senate. Not doing so would cripple what remains of the president's legislative agenda. Republicans, on the other hand, say they want President Obama to put down the executive action pen and work with them. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
All right, class. Let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him in the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah.
We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Joining us this evening on A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Jim and Nancy Petro, authors of False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent. Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez, this is a very interesting, and we're glad that Jim and Nancy are sharing a little bit of their information that they have and spending a little time with us this evening.
Yes.
Jim and Nancy, again, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, Jim, we talked about a couple of myths already, and Nancy, we talked about conviction errors get corrected on appeal. We talked about wrongful convictions are caused by innocent human error. Okay, the next one that was on our list, and please don't feel that you have to be restricted to our list, but the next one that kind of relates to the situation of the IRP6, at least, is our system almost never convicts an innocent person. I wish we had a laugh track right there, but we don't.
In touching on that issue, we need to look at the causes of wrongful conviction. And in broad crimes, especially sexual assault crimes, a wrong identification, an eyewitness who simply makes a mistake, is often the contributor that results in a wrongful conviction. If an eyewitness is on the witness stand and says, "That's the person who committed the sexual assault against me," that person is going to get convicted. But the point is, there's so many opportunities for error in the identification process. The FBI tracked this over a period of years in sexual assault cases, and with a fairly significant, robust sample of over 10,000 sexual assault cases where there was a perpetrator identified by the victim who was the eyewitness who said, that's the guy who did it, the error rate was 25%.
Proven by DNA.
Proven by DNA, those DNA-related cases.
Before DNA, you wouldn't have known there was an error.
Did you get that number? 25% out of 10,000?
Wow. Yeah, so that's 2,500 people that are wrongfully convicted, and those are the ones that can be...
Well, now there's DNA, and so
right.
Very often today, those aren't occurring any longer because they're using DNA to confirm or not to confirm the eyewitness identification. But what it did confirm to me is the weakness of an eyewitness, and I knew that. I was trained to learn that when I was a prosecutor back in the early 70s. Eyewitnesses can be wrong. The human memory is not what you think it is. And, you know, when they're pressured for the most part to go into a lineup with a whole bunch of individuals or a six-pack of photographs and they're looking at all of them and they know the police think one of these people is the perpetrator, they will make a selection. And they very often can be wrong. That number, again, is 25% statistically. That's huge. And what it means is that 20 years ago, a lot of people before DNA were going to prison for 15 and 20 years, and they might have been totally innocent, just misidentified by the witness.
And it also means that in cases where there is not DNA, that these errors are not perceived.
Right.
And that means that we have to really improve and use all recommendations procedurally to try to diminish the opportunity for error now that we understand that it occurs and we have a better understanding of why it occurs.
Mm-hmm.
I have known really talented prosecutors, and I salute them for this, who look at a case with an eyewitness only, and they look at the circumstances of the identification, and they know that those circumstances are somewhat consistent with the higher error rate, and they say, we're not going to go forward. It's not good enough evidence. And I really respect the prosecutor who makes a tough decision like that. And even to take it a step further, I've argued to appellate judges that, you know, with a proven error rate of 25%, if the only evidence, if there's nothing that supports the indictment except the eyewitness, if that's the only evidence, that's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim, let's go to the phones. Cliff, let's go to the phones.
Hi, caller. You state your name and your comment or question.
Name is Lamont Banks.
Hey, Lamont, how's it going?
Going pretty good. I salute your guest on there. I commend them for what they're doing. And I had a question. He talks about those folks that have been in an eyewitness situation and the error is at a high level. My concern is that those that have been convicted based upon vindictive actions, say you have a alleged victim that says in a sexual assault case, as you're talking about now, well, this person did this to me, but they have proven during the course of the trial or whatever goes on that they have been dishonest. And it's more of a vindictive thing, which is more common now in this era of our justice system today, because there are never no repercussions or consequences for people that try to ruin people's lives. In the case with RP6 and some of the things I've heard there where you have witnesses getting on the stand saying, I know this person said this to me, yet the RP6 never even met these people. The problem is, and I'd like your comments on that, your guest comments on that, in regards to what do we do to bring some type of justice to the people who deliberately lie. You said in one case, if an eyewitness gets on the stand and says, this person did this to me, 99 out of 100, they're going to get convicted. What do you do with the people who are vindictively setting out to destroy, to lie, to whatever motives they have or twisted way of thinking that they have? What do we do with our system that does nothing to these people because they are the friends of the prosecutors in having them perform prosecutional misconduct as well? What do we do with that?
You know, I can't believe there's a prosecutor anywhere that if they know someone's lying, although I guess I've heard of a few occasions where that's occurred, where they know someone's not telling the truth, but they use them as a witness anyway. I think the prosecutors who might use a witness who ultimately might be lying doesn't realize that they're putting a person on the witness stand who's not telling the truth. Having said that, there's no doubt these things occur. Nancy, what is the percentage of the exonerations, nearly 1,300? I know there's a percentage where it's been determined there was really no crime committed, and that's kind of what you're talking about. Someone who gets on the witness stand and says, this person committed a crime against me, when in fact they didn't, so therefore there was no crime. Now, isn't that about 20%?
Jim, I don't have that percentage with me right now, and in fact we're discovering, I think, more and more of that. Basically, people are, if you look at the National Registry of Exonerations, your audience may want to go to that site because it's a searchable database that's a joint project of the University of Michigan Law and Northwestern Law, and it's a fabulous resource. But you can search by contributor and by type of crime, and we're discovering that in that body there is a significant percentage of cases in which people have been committed or convicted of something that really wasn't a crime. For example, a murder, somebody's been convicted of murder when really what it was is an accidental death or even a suicide. And so that's an amazing statistic, and it's fairly high. I can't tell you exactly what it is.
We know outright lies occur, and Brian Banks is one of the best examples of that. A young man in high school convicted of rape because the girl said she raped him. He raped her, and then 10 years later, five years later. And he's contacting him and saying, gee, maybe we could see each other again. I'm sorry I lied. And here this guy sat in jail for those years.
Exactly.
And, you know, Nancy and Jim, you know, like you said, there's an excellent report out there on the National Registry of Exonerations and talks about all the causes of wrongful convictions. Also on the Innocence Project website, there's some stats out there as well. And I think, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, this may fall in that category of informants or bad informants, snitches.
Well, informants, actually, it's interesting when you look at the National Registry, and whereas in sexual assaults, the primary contributor is misidentification, in murder exonerations, the primary contributor is
false testimony,
you know, false accusation, and often that is because the victim, of course, cannot testify, and often someone who is a suspect instead turns, on someone else who may or may not have even been there. In the case of exonerations, they weren't even there. And they are convincing enough that they, you know, convict an innocent person based on that false informant.
Right. And the Innocence Project, they're showing that about 16% fall in that category.
Sure. And that would be about right.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about resources and information out there that really gets your listeners kind of some insight into the causes of wrongful conviction. And frankly, and this is a plug, we all have to plug things, but there's nothing that gives them that kind of insight in a more clear and convincing way is the book False Justice. And so I must say, if somebody sits down and they really want to understand what happens when someone is wrongfully convicted, read False Justice. It really does follow in a very quick and easy way.
And I don't want to pile on that too much, but I just want to say that what we tried to do with that book is, explain our journey of awakening, because we believed all these myths, and Jim had been a lawyer for more than 30 years, and so it was quite shocking to learn something so fundamentally different than what you believed after all that time. And that's what we tried to share, because once Jim bumped into the Clarence Elkins case, we really had so many questions that were unanswered, and the research for the book was our method of trying to find answers for ourselves, and we found out that many, many answers were out there, but they're not commonly known.
So, Jim and Nancy, we got one more quick break, and then when we come back, I know you guys are going to have to be taking off here.
Yeah, we got to break ourselves pretty quickly.
Yeah, so we got
we'll
got one more quick break, and then we're going to have some closing thoughts from you guys. So, Cliff, if you can do that, and then we'll go to this break, and we'll come back to you on the other side. So sit tight.
ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. America by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, and thank you for your service.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. It is our absolute pleasure to have Jim and Nancy Petro on the program this evening, the authors of False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent. Jim and Nancy, I know you guys got a jet here in a moment, so you know, you were saying just before the other break, you don't want to plug it too much, but plug away. What? Tell us about your book and, you know, how
I want to plug a theory, too, and that is that we all are responsible for the justice system that we have. We elect people who are judges. We elect people who are prosecutors. And we as voters and citizens need to be advocating for truth in justice. And we need to make it clear we don't want mistakes. We want everybody in the system to do all that they can to avoid. They know what the causes are. Now they have to do all that they can to make sure that those causes aren't present in a case where a conviction might occur. And, you know, that's part of it. I love to close a lot of my presentations with a quote from Justice John Marshall Harlan, a justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. 44 years ago, in a concurring opinion, he said that it is a fundamental value determination of our society that it is far worse to convict an innocent man than to let a guilty man go free. Now, what I'm saying is that that's not an either-or proposition, because when we convict an innocent man, we do both.
Okay, awesome, awesome. Hey, Jim and Nancy, just before you go, we have another caller in the queue, and I don't know if they have a question or comment for you, but let's see if we can take that one more comment, and then we'll cut you loose. Caller, go ahead.
Okay,
welcome
great.
To the program.
Good.
Caller from America, Roswell 2? Yes.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, we're here. Go ahead with your question or your comment.
Yes, my name is Johnetta Carr. And I'm actually I walk around Louisville, Kentucky, holding a sign that says over 10,000 falsely convicted each year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only 25 years old, which the age really doesn't matter. But I don't feel, you know, that it's okay, you know, for innocent people to sit in jail, you know. And I don't feel or ever think that it's okay for them to wait 10 or 20 years later to actually let people out and then say, oops, we're sorry, you know? That's not okay.
Right. Absolutely.
I agree.
Yeah, we totally agree.
And thank you for your comment. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, you got to get out there, get your voice out. And just like you, we don't believe it's okay either. That's why we bring education, awareness, and information about the judicial injustice so that we can see to it that innocent people don't spend time in prison. That's what we're about here at Just Cause.
And bring more friends in with you to do that.
There you go. Jim and Nancy, how can folks get in contact with you? Jim and Nancy, how can folks get in contact with you?
You know, they can basically email, they can email me at jimpetro73@gmail.com.
I would also suggest they could go to our books website.
That's
which
a good
is
idea.
Falsejustice.com, and there is a contact page there, which will come right to us.
And then we
do a lot of reporting on our Facebook page for the book, False Justice on Facebook. That's where we actually do, reporting every week about news. And then finally, I write for the Wrongful Conviction blog, which
yes.
is an international site for wrongful conviction, and I'm a contributing editor for that. So that is an excellent resource, primarily. I'm not a lawyer, but most of the contributors are lawyers who are focusing on this issue.
Yeah, and Nancy, you're absolutely right. That is an excellent blog. I go to it quite often myself. So Jim and Nancy Petro, authors of False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent. Also, listeners, you'll be able to find information about Jim and Nancy posted on our website, and you can go to ajcradio.com. We will have links posted there. We'll have archives of this program posted as well. And, Clip, you have any other questions or comments? We appreciate Jim and Nancy being here. Ethel, you got anything for them?
No, I think I just want to say, you know, thank you guys for coming on. You have definitely opened our eyes from another perspective. I mean, Jim, with you have been an attorney general to give us the insight that you have. It's much appreciated. Gives us another level to continue the fight.
And thanks you guys
thanks.
So much
thanks
for
very
being
much.
With
good
guys.
Being with you.
Thank you for your program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for
all
having
right.
us.
Have a great evening. That's
thank
Jim
you.
And Nancy
you
Petro, authors
good.
Of False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent. You know, Cliff, that, and Ethel, that was very interesting. And you know, for the most part, listeners, we were able to kind of highlight 3 of the myths. But as the book says, there are 8 myths. And so, you know, go out there, read their book. Like Nancy was talking about, the blogs and all the information that they post out there, it's
yeah.
a lot of interesting stuff, things
yeah,
that will
is.
Certainly open your eyes to the injustice that goes on in this country. So let's shift gears. The next subject, let's go to what happened last night, you know, and like we were talking earlier, Just Cause and has been on several programs over the last year, actually. I mean, we've been making a lot of headway, and a lot of folks, you know, they see the injustice that has occurred in this situation with the IRP6, and we were talking about, you know, over the weekend, Pastor Rose Banks was on with Janice Graham on Our Common Ground.
Right.
On Sunday, there was Don and Donna with Cowboy Logic. And then last night, There was the program with Carl Nelson. So, you know, this was a situation where, what, Just Cause has been on Carl Nelson's show,
yeah,
what,
twice.
Three times. Well, this was the third time.
No, this was the fourth time.
Oh, was it really?
Yes.
And, I mean, Ethel, you were right there on the, and Cliff, you were on the
yes,
program,
right.
too. I mean, it was quite a different reception. I mean, you know, we had, where Carl had us on before.
Right.
We shared all the information about the IRP6.
Everything.
And then this time, this man just, he fell off of his chair and hit his head or something. What, I mean, what happened, Cliff?
Well, I mean, when you look at it, we're still trying to figure out, you know what, Carl, what's the attack on the IRP6 about? I mean, we're bringing them up to speed on what's going on. He goes on this rant. Well, why did they represent themselves? You don't go up against the federal government without having an attorney. Well, when we started to try to explain that to him,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we understand that, you know, sometimes talk show hosts, they have to play the devil's advocate to get
right.
the entire story out there. So
right.
it's not an issue, even if you don't agree with what we're saying, when we lay the truth out to you, I mean, there's nothing else to say except, you know, this is true or this is a lie.
Right.
But he began attacking us as a Just Cause, attacking the IRP6, you know, basically trying to call them stupid for going up against the federal government. And then when he really got out of line
okay.
is when he started to attack Pastor Banks.
That's
I'm like,
right.
I'm like, you need to show some respect.
It's very disrespectful.
Where respect is due, yeah. I mean, you have Pastor Banks is not only a pastor. She is the mother of David Banks of the IRP6.
Yeah.
She's also the mother-in-law of Gary Walker. And for him to disrespect her and begin to call, you know, these guys who were our brothers and her sons to say, oh, well, you know, basically they were stupid for fighting the federal government. Well, just from what we just heard from Jim and Nancy, I mean, their court-appointed attorneys were not interested in fighting for them. They weren't interested in doing anything except getting them to do a plea deal. And what Jim and Nancy just said is you have to ensure that whoever is fighting for you as your court-appointed attorney, that this person has to ensure that they have done their homework, they make the correct objection, so that when you go up on appeal, you have something to fight with. The appellate
exactly.
court only sees what you have that went on in court, that is in your court documents, your transcripts, if you will, and without your objection, no matter what happened,
right.
if anything wrong happened and you didn't object or your attorney didn't object, you cannot bring that up
you
on appeal.
Got a chance.
Right. We have just found this information out. So then for Carl the Fool Nelson to say, why would these guys go up against the federal government without an attorney? Well, what were they supposed to do? And one caller called in and said, and told him, said, Carl, as a black man, you understand that the system will fight you and try to
That's
hold
right.
you
That's
down.
Right.
And you saw what happened here. How is it that you're attacking these men? And it was totally crazy. We'll get more into it. We have a caller on the line. This is our very own beloved Olivia, and she wants to make a comment. Go ahead, if you will.
Hey, guys. Typically, I like to stay in the background, but when you guys started talking about Carl Nelson, I had to get in on this one. What bothered me about it is Carl acted as if he knew nothing about this case, which is totally, totally not true. I had been reaching out to Carl Nelson since July of 2013. I have provided Carl with all kinds of information in regards to the IRP6 case, a Just Cause, what we stand for. He knows these guys are innocent. But for him to come off yesterday and the way he treated Ethel, the way he treated Cliff, the way he showed disrespect for a pastor is totally uncalled for. And so, like I said, I typically like to stay in the background, but sometimes there's a time where you got to take a stand and say enough is enough. And so I wanted to make my voice heard about his actions, and I can tell you, I will not rest until everybody knows what type of fool he acted in regards to people that have done nothing but stand up for what's right. And I think he should have took in consideration the families, their pain. They're suffering. What they've been experiencing, he had no compassion, showed none. And I think for those type of people We got to make our voices loud. I mean loud. So okay. I tell you guys, you can count me in when it comes to speaking up and saying enough is enough. I got your back.
Hey, Olivia, and one of the things, too, that struck me as being just ridiculous, he claims to be a journalist, and he kept saying that like he was trying to prove something to himself. He said, well, I'm a journalist, and I just have to present the facts, and I have to dig for the facts. And, you know, if I'm not asking the right questions,
the
then what should
questions.
I be asking?
Mm-hmm.
And then are the questions that I'm asking, are they tough questions? Well, mm-hmm. Mr. Nelson, the questions that you were asking, yes, they were wrong. And were you asking tough questions? Absolutely not. And this cop-out talking about, you know, being a journalist and seeking the facts. Well, sir, you did not even give Cliff, Ms. Lopez, or the pastor even an opportunity to explain some of the things that you were asking. You were just on the attack.
Exactly.
And so, you know, Ms. Carl Nelson, if you're out there, hey, call in to our show.
Please.
Call in right now. I mean, the number is 718-305-7176. 718-305-7176. Anybody else who heard that Carl Nelson fiasco and his attack on Pastor Rose Banks and Just Cause, if you heard that, hey, we invite you to call in as well. We want to hear this. I mean, Carl, he kept, you know, trying to get his loyal followers to jump in there, and his followers were even saying, you know, I believe the brothers are innocent. You know, he wasn't getting people to back him up on his shenanigans. So anyway, we're going to take
a break. And Sam,
Olivia, hold on. We'll be right back. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. We bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Don't go anywhere.
Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a Supply Depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That'll take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hey, everybody. Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 1993, at the age of 16, Daniel Villegas confessed to a double murder he did not commit. Villegas, who still maintains his innocence, was the victim of a faulty legal system. Other teens that implicated Villegas at the time were also interrogated in the same manner and later testified in court that detectives had bullied them into it. The two survivors from the shooting, Juan Medina and Jesse Hernandez, recently signed affidavits saying Villegas' confession did not match what really happened. Villegas' first trial in 94 ended in a hung jury and a mistrial. During a retrial in 1995, first trial counsel asked to be appointed, but the court declined to do so, and public defender John D. Gates received the case. The first trial transcript was an invaluable roadmap that had gained a hung jury, yet Gates failed to call 18 witnesses from the first trial who would have offered evidence of an alibi for Villegas. Witnesses not called to testify included Villegas' parents, expert witnesses such as psychiatrists who could have testified with regard to Villegas' mental abilities, medication he was on, and the fact that he dropped out of school in the seventh grade. Character witnesses were never called. Interview witnesses who were willing to testify that Detective Alfonso Marquez bullied them and tried to coerce them into making false confessions were never called. And Daniel Villegas himself was never brought to the stand. On top of it all, Gates failed to interview and consult with first trial counsel who offered his assistance. This was a double murder that was completely lacking in evidence. Four other minors confessed to the same crime. No murder weapon was ever found. No vehicles were ever identified. There was no description of a perpetrator from eyewitnesses. No forensics evidence was ever found that linked any possible perpetrator to the crime. Witness statements did not match. Physical evidence was non-existent. The only proof was this particular confession from a boy who claimed he was coerced. Through his testimony at his first trial, Villegas explained to the jury why he made the false and incriminating statements in his confession. He told the jury how detectives threatened him, hit him, scared him, and intimidated him into making a confession as he was badgered for 4 or 5 hours and repeatedly hit in the head by detectives before he made a confession. Villegas relented and provided the confession that was used against him in trial. He explained in court how detectives helped him write out the statement. After having read the numerous pages of court transcripts, police reports, and statements that had been furnished to me, I noticed a very poor investigation conducted by the detectives of the El Paso Police Department. Late last year, defense attorney Charles Roberts filed a habeas corpus writ showing that Villegas had ineffective counsel during his retrial, thus leading to his conviction and a life sentence in prison. Villegas was released on a $50,000 bond while a district attorney decides whether to pursue a new trial. The Los Angeles Times reports that an appellate court vacated the conviction in December. This is Cliff Stewart with your exoneration moment on A Just Cause Radio.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you educational awareness and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, up Lopez. Got a good show going this evening. We're talking about what happened last night on the Carl Nelson Show and how he was very disrespectful to Pastor Rose Banks, as well as to you, Ethel, and Cliff. And Olivia, before the break, Olivia Hodges, she was going to make, and she's part of A Just Cause, she was going to make another comment. Olivia.
Yes, Sam. The other thing I wanted to make a comment about, I was thinking when you invite a guest into your home, you don't treat people like that when you invite guests over. You're polite, you're courteous, you're kind. He didn't give us that benefit yesterday. And I've listened to his show on many occasions, and I've heard other guests go on his show, and they talk, uninterrupted. And that's what he should have gave us, that same opportunity. Because if you have a mother and a pastor that is fighting and trying to make her voice heard about her loved ones that are suffering in prison wrongfully, that she goes down and visit every weekend, and you're saying, hold on, we're fighting for you, and we get on a show that you invited us to share our voice, and you do that to us, how cruel. And when I was listening to that call on yesterday, I'm telling you, because when you see people working and basically giving their all, this is time-consuming. This is taking time out of our lives to say, hey, wake up, America. People are suffering every day with wrongful convictions. Wake up. And then you get somebody to act a stone-crazy fool
And Olivia,
don't give them that opportunity. Something needs to be done about that.
Absolutely, Olivia. And one thing I want to say about that as well, it is totally my feelings that he wanted to interview Pastor Rose on his show so that he could do exactly what he did. He was trying to discredit everything that was said. Everything that was said, he was trying to discredit us. And the thing is, too, he didn't like the fact that Pastor Rose was putting out the information she was putting out. Well, this woman has three children that have been wrongly convicted. And if she doesn't have the passion, if she's not angry, then I don't know who should be. You know, I mean, you're going to be in agreement for the first three shows, and then all of a sudden, you come back out of the blue, well, I want to interview Pastor Rose. Okay, well, yes, you can interview Pastor Rose, but you are not going to sit here and discredit her. You are not going to sit here and
make her
sound like she's telling some tale that's out of no man's land. You know, I want to know this for Carl Nelson. I want to know who paid you to do this show yesterday. Who paid you to Pastor Rose to come on to try and discredit her with talking about her family who's been wrongly convicted and the family members of those that are sitting out there, you know, going through all this stuff because their husbands and their fathers are not there. Who paid you, Carl Nelson? Who paid you to do this? You don't just pay.
But that's the way it didn't work. It didn't work
because you know what? He sat there and he asked me a question after he asked me to tell him about the ones that we had reached out to. And I started telling him, you know, giving him the information. So he asked me this question about, you know, well, why aren't they helping you? So I says to this man, I says, well, I can only tell you what my thoughts are as to why they're not helping you. And I began to relay that to him. So he comes back with, well, you're not answering my question. Well, are you a dumb idiot? I cannot go into these people's head and tell you why they are not answering me, why they are not reaching out to us. That is not something that I can tell you. I can only give you my opinion as to why they are not reaching out.
And Ethel, I think to that point also, Cliff actually, he's responded to that question with a very adequate answer.
Absolutely.
He said, you know, Carl, you as a journalist, it's your job to ask that question. If you want to present a balanced story, then you have a Just Cause on your program. You're hearing this side of it. And then the people that you're questioning as to, well, why isn't Al Sharpton doing anything? Why isn't Jesse Jackson doing anything? Why isn't Vernon Jordan do what he did?
Exactly.
I'm sure Carl Nelson has all these people in his Rolodex. And so,
you know,
in the day of smartphones, you know, I'm kind of dating myself talking about a Rolodex, but I'm sure he has all those numbers.
And Sam, since this is not the first time we have given him these names, maybe some of those same people reached out to him. Maybe they have already done that.
That's right. And so, you know, it all boils right down to what we've been saying. It was an all-out attack. And then some of the other things that he brought up, you know, were just totally out of line. And we're going to talk just a little bit more about this. I mean, we're running out of time, but Cliff, go for it.
All right. ConservativeNationMedia.com starts off the work week every Monday in a big way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. But even if you're not from the volunteer state, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading out all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure to check him out. Brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins.
Okay, Ethel, go ahead, and then we got some folks waiting in the queue to get
absolutely.
In on this conversation.
There was just one other thing that I wanted to say. You know, when we reached out to Congressman John Conyers' office, his chief of staff, Yolanda Lipsy, she told us when we went there to visit with her, Sam, Cliff, and myself, she told us that the major problem is that black people as a whole don't come together on anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, So therein lies your problem.
And
Carl Nelson, did you get that? Therein lies your problem, brother.
There you go.
And, I mean, you know, Ethel, she made a very telling comment to you about the members of Congress that, you know, are African-American, black, whatever you want to call them.
Yes.
But tell the audience about what she said to you about that.
Well, I mean, even you know, with Congress, she's telling us, you know, about how these people are not gonna basically reach out to you to do anything. And these were her words basically. They're not gonna reach out to you to do anything. And you're coming to Congressman Conyers. She said he picks and chooses whatever he wants to do. You know, we even brought up a case and told him, well, Congressman Conyers is working on this particular case. Well, what is the problem that he can't? Well, he pick and choose what he wants to do, and yours is just not one of them that he wants to work on.
All right, Cliff, let's go to the phones. We got a lot of people lined up in the queue, and so hello caller, we want to get your comment or question real quick, please.
Okay, we got Sharon, if you go ahead.
We got about 30 seconds, okay. Sharon. We got to go to a break, but go ahead, please.
Okay, yes, I do. I just want to say that I did listen to the show on yesterday, and to say to Carl Nelson, when the heat gets on, then people change their tune. So that's probably what happened to him. For him to ask the question, why aren't they responding at all, he knows why. How should we know? How should we know? And he has connection with these people, so why don't he, since he has the platform, why don't he ask, why aren't you? And they probably then already contacted him, and that's why he changed his tune all of a sudden.
Absolutely.
And for all them.
Hey, Sharon, thanks for that call, and we're going to be right back here in a moment on A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Don't go anywhere. We're going to get some more callers here in a moment.
The Internet's official Rhino Hunting Safari.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is. Because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Just Talk Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. So we're talking about what happened last night on Carl Nelson's show, and let's take another caller, Cliff.
Okay, we have Jeanette on the line. Jeanette, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Okay, we got about 30 seconds. We're running out of time. We got a lot of people in the queue to talk.
Not a problem. I won't be long. I listened to the show, and what I resented above all was the disrespect. But to add to that, to be a host or call yourself hosting a show, invite a guest, and then be so uninformed, or pretend to be so uninformed to the point of misrepresenting the IRP6. That's what I had a problem with. I'm just thinking, okay, then you're asking questions, you're not giving anybody a chance to answer them, and then you're asking the same thing and downright attacking them. That's not your job as a host. And then you want to call yourself a journalist. Well, then you even did the IRP6 a greater injustice. And so in a nutshell, I was just very, very disappointed, and I'm just outraged by the whole angle that he came at it with.
Absolutely, and thanks for that call and for that comment. And, you know, also on the program, you know, there were several folks who called in on his program after the fact,
yes.
And he kept saying, you know, that, you know, folks were, that there was no support in his online or anything, mm-hmm. when the comments that we were actually seeing were just the opposite.
Absolutely.
Let's go to another caller here, Cliff. Who do we have on the call? Caller, go ahead.
Hi, we have Michelle on the line. Go ahead with your comment.
Yeah, I heard the show last night, and what bothered me was from the very beginning, he was in attack mode. He was trying to make the IRP6 look stupid, like they had no lawyer. Why would you go to court without a lawyer? When he knew the facts of the case and why the guys had to go pro se. And what I think is disgusting is the fact that how rude and disrespectful to Pastor Rose he was. That's a mother that has had three children wrongfully convicted. And they try to act like we're not supposed to have passion about how I feel. Well, if you keep kicking me, I'm going to have something to say. And I resented it. And then he tried to act like he was impartial and he was trying to hear the story. He's full of crap. And I was
Absolutely.
Surprised that we had been on his they had been on the show a few times, and how rude and out of control he was.
Absolutely.
He was completely out of line. I resented it from the very beginning. I thought, he's got a problem.
Absolutely. Michelle, thanks for that for the call and for the comment. And, you know, folks, if you want to really find out the real story about the IRP6, join us here each week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And actually, you can hear a lot more on live365.com and ajcradio.com. And we're going to be breaking this story down all the way from the beginning to the end. Cliff, the next caller, please.
We have Tiffany on the line. Tiffany, go ahead with your comment.
I just wanted to say about Carl, my dad is Clinton Stewart, a part of the IRP6, and the way he was talking and just saying that pretty much the men are stupid, I'm a kid sitting here listening to your show, and you're calling my dad stupid. And the disrespect that he showed toward all the families, toward Pastor Rose, whose son is in prison and having no compassion at all, is just ridiculous. And I guarantee you, if one of his kids was in prison, or if his son or his brother or whatever, he would have want somebody to have compassion on him. And that's all I have to say.
And he wouldn't think it was stupid.
Thank you very much, Tiffany. Thanks. Go ahead, Cliff. Next caller.
Okay, we have Liz on the line. Go ahead with your comment,
yes.
Liz.
Yes, I listened to the show as well. Carl Nelson has lost his ever-loving mind. I didn't appreciate it at all. I go every Saturday, or most Saturdays, and I know what these guys are innocent, and I feel that. And for him to attack them and to attack my pastor, he has lost his ever-loving mind. We need to do something to get him out of the air, because he shouldn't be on the air if he can't support people. And I resent it with everything in me.
Well, Liz, thank you for that comment. And you know, I think that, I mean, there are a lot of folks who share that sentiment.
Definitely.
And, Cliff, do we have the pastor on the line?
Yes, I believe so. Pastor Banks, is this you?
Hold. Okay, so we're trying
to to the show and different comments coming in tonight, and I wanted to say that I am so grateful that I have feelings. They say, "Well, she's a little emotional." Emotion is a part of our makeup as human beings. That's our way that God put in us for expression. Our emotions represent all of our feelings. When I see somebody try to put somebody down because they express through their emotions, you are detached. You have not a clue to what's going on in life. And you know, another thing that really just unnerves me is the fact that he, as a black man, would attack his own people and try to bring them down. I am convinced from the time that you first went on the show that he saw it as clear as it was. Somebody got to this man and said to him, and he's a big coward and a bully to have done it, to say, try to discredit them. Let me serve notice on you tonight. Nobody discredits truth. I don't care who you are. For the word of God plainly states that you cannot do nothing against truth, only for it. So all that you did yesterday didn't hurt us one bit, but we want you to know that being on your show in many respects made us even fight harder. You know what? It's a shame that the black people as a whole have always been a divided race. I don't think there's another race on the planet that fight against each other, that pull the other one down. We don't like to see one get up and make it. If you do one thing better than me, I'm coming to try to pull you down. You know what? I look at the Asian people that come to this country. They will stand with their friends, help them in business. White America's going to stand and give people a chance, even when they're not qualified for some jobs. They give it to them anyway. They work with them. Give them a chance. What is wrong with the black race of people that we fight each other? We talk about slavery and all that they done to people, all the whites, what they did. I preached a message not long ago that says, you know what? Slavery never had to be. All it took was black people coming together, uniting together, saying we're not going to be a slave, and there wouldn't have been any slaves. Because all of the blacks outnumber all of their masters. What is it that we take this thing, and then when one got promoted, if you want to call it that, from the field as a black, and bring him into the mansion or the house now, and make him a house Negro, all of a sudden he don't want you to mess with that. Don't get me in no trouble. I watched Roots not long ago when he was on there telling Kunti, I don't want you to get me in no trouble. I'm up in the house now. That's the same mentality exists today. I've made it in the world. I'm not reaching back to nobody else down there. I'm not going to try to help you because I've made it now, and I ain't going to let nothing shake me from my throne. At some point in time, let me tell you, in this country, they come and get all of you anyway. If they could bring down Martha Stewart and she's white, you know blacks as a whole, it's just a matter of time. If they want to bring you down, they'll bring you down. We better come together as a people, stand together, support each other, and quit fighting each other. And because once we start supporting and joining hands as a force, we become a force to be reckoned with in this country, and not until then. You can fight all you want to. A house divided against itself shall never stand. That's all I got to say.
Thank you much for those wonderful words. I mean, they resound true, and, you know, the main thing that the pastor said right there, you cannot do anything
with truth
against the truth. When it's on the table, it's there. It is what it is. There's nothing else to do with
that's
it. And
right.
Like she said, hey, that's all I got to say.
That's it, man. And you know, the pastor just summed it up, like you said, and just laid it on the line. And it's one of those things that if you have the means by which to do something, step up and do it. But, you know, it's not right to know that a wrong has been done, and then you're going to lash out at the very people that you know have been done wrong. And y'all know one of my sayings is that, you know, if you stand on the side, and it basically comes, I'm going to summarize here, you know, Bishop Desmond Tutu says, you know, if you see an injustice being done and you don't do anything about it, you just sided with the oppressor.
And you let somebody pay you to side with the oppressor. You are bigger fool than you have than they ever lived.
And I tell you what, hey, we really appreciate all the callers who called in this evening. And, you know, we want to give a special thank you to our special guests this evening with Jim and Nancy Petro, and talking to us about, you know, wrongful convictions and the myths associated with that. And, you know, you can go out and check out their book, False Justice, 8 Myths That Convict the Innocent. Cliff.
Yeah, we want to say thank you to everyone in the chat room. You can again in there tonight. And I want to say thank you for our in-studio and special guests. Also, to K&D Productions, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson, running the board, helping out the Oskilla girls in the control room. To our production support crew, couldn't do it without you guys. You know, without you, we couldn't get the show done. To the truth, we know you out there. We appreciate it.
Ethel, what's that phone number?
I just want to say keep dialing Eric Holder's number, 202-514-2003 and 2005. Shout out to Olivia Hodges and Miss Barbara Johnson. They're not in studio tonight, but they help keep us going.
Pray for our brothers, Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Kendrick Barnes. Tune in Thursday evening. Check out our website, ajcradio.com. Check out the program schedules. And we're going to start at the very beginning of the IRP 6 story and the IRP solution story. We're going to break this thing down, and so folks will understand right from the very beginning, talking about the business, IRP solutions, the business, Silk, Case Investigative Lifecycle Software, the dream. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring the education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Thanks for joining us. Good evening, America.
Good night.
Good night.